Political divisions over rent control have just toppled Sweden's government. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Stefan Löfven has become the first Swedish prime minister to be ousted by parliament after losing a confidence vote this morning. He now has 1 week to either resign or call a snap election. It all comes after his minority government failed to secure parliamentary backing to lift a rent cap on new build apartments. From Stockholm, the BBC's Maddie Savage explains why that became such a crucial issue for the prime minister's future.
Really, we need a bit of a history lesson. A lot of apartments in Sweden have rent caps, rent controls, and there was a proposal to allow a stop on these rent caps for new apartments. Ironically, this isn't something that the Swedish Prime Minister was in favour of, but he'd agreed to look into the issue as a concession to some of the centre-right parties. But the Left Party, which has about 10% of the vote in Sweden, is strongly in favour of rent controls, strongly against market rents. They said that they were willing to vote against the government if that proposal remained on the table. In the end, it was the nationalist Sweden Democrats who were also against market rents. Although they're a nationalist right-wing party in many ways, a lot of their supporters are low income. And so they were very much also against the idea of getting rid of rent caps. And essentially, what we now understand is that the Prime Minister will need to decide whether to resign or call a snap election.
And was it all down to this issue of rent control that led to this vote, or were there other sort of underlying issues that fueled it as well?
What happens in Swedish politics is that before a vote, all of the parties get the chance to give a speech in Parliament. So some parties talking about how Sweden's government has handled the pandemic, others worrying about what's happened in terms of how it's tackled crime. So they wanted to make sure that people knew that it wasn't just about rent caps for them. There'll either be a snap election that's called, or the Swedish Prime Minister will resign. And then the other parties will actually have the chance to enter into negotiations. We'll have to see whether there is some kind of new coalition that can be formed, or whether there will be a snap election.
And do you have a sense of what the Prime Minister is likely to do next?
Going on his precedence, the Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven, he likes to take his time. He's known for last-minute negotiations. He's known for pulling things out of the bag. I think anything could happen.
On a very busy news morning for you, the BBC's Maddie Savage in Stockholm for us. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Checking the numbers now, Sweden's benchmark stock index has pared earlier losses of nearly 1%. It's now trading down just more than 0.5%. That's a slightly different tone across the rest of the region this morning. Benchmarks across Paris, London, Frankfurt, and Milan are up in the 0.1% to 0.2% range. Stocks in Asia, meanwhile, were sharply lower amid worries about how quickly the U.S. Federal Reserve could begin raising interest rates. Elsewhere, business investment across borders dropped 35% last year as coronavirus lockdowns ground the economy to a halt. That's according to new figures released today from the UN's Conference on Trade and Development. The silver lining, the agency said, investment flows are expected to recover somewhat this year by around 10 to 15%. The BBC's Jonathan Josephs has more on that story.
The economic damage caused by the pandemic means many companies have had to think again about where they spend money. Worldwide foreign direct investment has fallen from $1.5 trillion in 2019 to just $1 trillion in 2020, its lowest in 16 years. That's meant less spending on new projects overseas in areas such as car-making, construction and transport links. Europe and North America were the worst affected regions. Asia was the only one to see growth as more money flowed into China, Hong Kong and India.
Jonathan Joseph's reporting there. Today, corporate giants are taking the reins in Japan's COVID-19 vaccination drive. Companies including carmaker Toyota and investment conglomerate SoftBank have set up their own vaccine centers for employees, their families, and nearby residents. It's all part of a government plan to try and boost the nation's vaccine take-up and reduce pressure on local governments. The BBC's Mariko Oi explains why Japan's vaccine rollout has been slow.
So initially they said that they would allow, you know, people above the age of 65 to start getting the jabs. But, you know, I saw a lot of people complaining that the website actually was overwhelmed by the amount and wasn't accessible, especially because it was targeting the elderly population. A lot of them had to ask their children, grandchildren to help out. Then they started having issues of people not showing up or, you know, cancelling last minute. So in order not to get the jabs wasted, they started started inviting people of younger age groups, but also allowing companies to start the rollout among its employees and also their family members to really speed up the vaccine rollout.
And we know that work plays a big role in people's lives in Japan. So do you think that pressure from work colleagues could potentially be more effective than maybe just average societal pressure to get a vaccine there?
If someone was feeling reluctant about getting vaccinated, I think they would still, even among their colleagues, I think the anti-vaxxer sentiment is strong enough for people to feel comfortable to say that they don't want to receive the jab. But at the same time, given the scale of, you know, some of those companies involved in this campaign, so SoftBank, telecom giant, also conglomerate, it can vaccinate about 250,000 people. Toyota car maker also trying to handle about 80,000 people. So instead of people having to receive the vaccine tickets in order to make the appointment with their local authorities and going to that venue, I think this is a much quicker way to get as many people vaccinated before the Tokyo Olympics start.
The BBC's Mariko Oi for us. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem.
Well, whether the Olympic Games should go ahead has been a controversial topic in Japan. Despite scientific advice, the events should be held in empty stadiums. Olympic organizers this morning fixed the spectator limit at just 50% of venue capacity. That's a maximum of 10,000 people. They said, though, that if COVID-19 infections surge, the Games could move behind closed doors. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.